buddy. Did you ever have that crazy uncle at a Christmas party when he started saying these three guys walked into a bar? Well, I happen to know those other two guys that are walking into a bar. My name's Stu Turley, President and CEO of the Sandstone Group, and we are the three podcasters. Today, we're going to cover some pretty big topics. We got Biden. We got President Z. We got broken down things, and we've also even got some other stuff going on in California. I got me an expert with a pump jack running in the background. He's an EMP operator. He's a big dog over there at Pecos operating. But more importantly, his day job is the podcast host for The Crude Truth. How are you, RT?
I'm doing well. And you're... I'm doing well. The Crude Truth is doing great. And Pecos Country Operating, that actually pays my paycheck for that day job, is doing really, really well also. And Stu, thank you so much for always with that great intro. You know, it's just always so much fun to, you know, we got three guys walking to a bar. One of them happens to be Stu Turley. One of them happens to be Ray Trevino. And the last but not least, the most revered, is the one, the only, David Blackman.
Hey, David, right. Could you give us the Popo wave? Because you're on what? RT, he's on he's on Substack, which is an animal, twice. He's so painful, he's got to paint, you know, get everybody twice. He's on the Daily Caller. He's on the Telegraph. He's in Forbes. He's also got the Energy Question, and he's also got the Energy Transition. Unbelievable. And you got a new podcast host on there with Saeed. He's a nut.
Yeah, he's fantastic. Osama Rizvi, he's great. He's one of the smartest guys I've come across, and based in Pakistan, and he gives us some great perspective on what's happening in Asia, which we don't talk about enough, frankly, and we don't talk enough about what's going on in Africa and other parts of the global South as well, South America too, because all of that is big stuff that has an impact globally. And unfortunately, our news establishment here in the United States doesn't cover it much.
And normally you guys are Monday on that, right?
Yes, Monday morning, first thing. By the way, I think we're going to have to start calling RT Trevino the most interesting man in energy. He is in a different location every time we record this podcast. Stu and I, well, Stu's in a different location a lot of the time, too. I'm just always sitting up here in my studio, you know, because I'm lazy. But you guys move around a lot.
No, come on now. I think the only reason why we're meeting and where we are right now is because Stu's moving around so much we can't get back into the bar. God knows my hand can, you know, my head. And but hopefully here after the holiday season, we'll get back together. And no, I'm just out on another location right now trying to at least help fuel the world for all the energy, more importantly, all the power we need for the electrical grid, if you know what I mean. You know, you mentioned real quick, y'all bringing on the new guy on the energy transition. And I think that's awesome, bringing on Saeed. And you mentioned South America. You know, I find it very interesting that all of a sudden that Exxon is, you know, buying up the stuff down there with Chevron in that Guyana field. And all of a sudden, a dictator country, i.e. Venezuela, is starting to say, hey, wait a minute, those are our fields. And that's not being brought up anywhere right now, is it?
Well, yeah, you know, Venezuela's had that claim. I think they first started making that claim in the mid-90s. They have lost several times in several different courts, and the World Court rejected their claim. What was it, earlier this year or late last year? And but then they've renewed it again using different arguments. I don't think there's any legitimacy to it, but it sure is a nuisance for the Guyanese government and for the consortium down there that's developing that massive oil field. By the way, Guyana has 800,000 people. That's their population. It's an area the size of a portion of South Texas. It is It is expected. It's already producing 427,000 barrels of oil a day out of the Stabroek Block, is what the development's called. By 2027, they're going to be producing 1 million barrels a day. Guyana's economy is already the fastest growing economy on Earth, and it's going to stay that way for the next 10 years or more, as ExxonMobil and now Chevron will become a partner as a result of the Hess acquisition. And then CNOOC, one of the Chinese national oil companies, is the third partner. And that little country is going to become fabulously wealthy because of that oil development.
Well, it sounds like to me I need to get some franchises and Whataburger out there and some Starbucks starting real quick, if you know what I mean. And maybe some Red Bull for all those oil and gas guys that need to be out there.
I think I'm going to fund some illegals and give them some pay cards and then have an army down there, because I'm going to need a place to live. Never mind. Sorry, that's already been done in the U.S. It's not an original idea.
Yeah, Marty, no.
You had another story out in California, didn't you?
You me?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know if it's a story, but I was, you know, here today when we're recording, I just, you know, wanted to do some real bar talk, and this Twitter thing or X, you know, I'm trying to get more on it. So be sure to check out my Twitter feed @truth_crude. And I'll let the guys also tell theirs here in a second. But, you know, every now and then you go down those Twitter holes and can you say that? Is that a thing? I don't know.
Apparently.
But, but they're showing videos right now of the Chinese government coming into San Francisco, and you would think that we're in China. There's not one American flag anywhere. The streets are covered with Chinese flags, with Chinese signs, and it's like, you know, this is getting scary. I believe in national pride, okay? You know, you go to certain concerts, you got people that have their country's flag. I get it. You're representing. But when you move to a new country, that is your new country. You know, you're here for the passion, for all the opportunities. And it just blew me away. And you would think we were in China with the way that this governor and president impersonator Newsom is rolling out the red carpet for this guy. It's scary. Scary. And if I was better at my Dana Carvey, George Bush impersonations from the early 90s, I'd be all scary. Very scary. So
all I got is nuclear when George W. nuclear, or whoever was saying that, it was absolutely wonderful. Nuclear.
Yes. Nuclear.
But he got it. Jimmy Carter, who was a nuclear engineer, supposedly, who pronounced the word the wrong way. So, you know, it's tradition.
Well, you know, y'all say that, and I on Twitter or on YouTube and on my with Crude Truth website, thecrudetruth.com, I just released my interview with Grace Stanky, who is Miss America 2023, but more importantly, she's a nuclear engineer at the University of Wisconsin. She's graduating here in the next 3 or 4 months, and somebody on YouTube had to say that we were saying nuclear wrong. It's like, you know what? Maybe it was my Texas accent. Maybe it was her Wisconsin accent. You knew what we meant, okay? Come on.
There you go.
She's class act. That was a fabulous interview, dude.
Y'all, she is a wealth of knowledge. And, I mean, she has a passion for nuclear engineering. She's going to go into the field after graduating. And what a great representative for the United States to really be pro-nuclear. You know, one thing we've talked about in the past are these modular nuclear deals, right, David? And I butchered it right there. But I think these modular nuclear cubes are going to really be the
reactors.
Reactors. Yeah. Thank you.
Exactly.
SMRs, RT. SMRs.
Yeah. SMRs. Yes. And if we can find a way to invest in them, I will do that along with oil. I'll tell you that much. I believe in them.
Got to have the base load.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they'll be the future if the government allows them to be the future. Yes.
Well, David, yeah. Daily Caller article flows right on into that. Now, wait a minute. One of the things that I just got tickled at was, did you guys see on X or Twitter or whatever Elon's calling it today, the thing where Governor Newsom was standing there and somebody said, did you just clean up the cities for President Z? And he goes, yeah, but what about it? They could have cleaned the city up all of this time. All it takes is President Z rolling in and they're going to do it. This was like Biden. Remember when we were laughing about Biden when they cleaned up down there near the city?
On the border.
Oh, in El Paso, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't even have to change his depends because he was walking in going, this is clean. There's no border. Right. And Mayorkas was going, the border secure. I don't
know. You know what confuses me about that situation in San Francisco is our news media has no curiosity about where all those homeless folks
went
and all of the stuff that has been occupying the streets in that city for the last several years. Where did they all go? Where did
Oakland. I heard they sent them to Oakland, and I mean that. I'm not trying to make a joke. I heard they bus them to Oakland. That is what I heard. I'm not trying to make a joke.
I'm not joking,
David. I seriously heard that, like, from, I think, from Fox News, and that they went to that, they shipped them to Oakland, they bussed them to Oakland.
That sounds about right.
All those in favor of bussing him to New York and seeing the mayor just lose his mind, all these homeless people.
Well, it's
who else can say they came to America and then got to go on a cross country trip from Oakland to New York City? I can't even say I've been on a cross country trip yet.
How about the Venezuelans going through one snowstorm and saying the accommodations aren't that good in Detroit and they want to go back to Venezuela?
Oh yeah, yeah! Isn't that a great story? Yeah, they're it's Chicago, not Detroit. It was Chicago.
Oh, right.
Things are so awful in Chicago that the illegal immigrants from Venezuela are literally trying to find ways to get back to Venezuela. That's how bad life is in Chicago right now.
Really
stunning story. And that story was what was it, in the New York Times or one of the major newspapers? It was wild.
Yeah. Well, they're not prepared for all these people. You know, whoever it is that is convincing everybody to come to America is telling them there's jobs, there is food, there's this. And it's like, none of that is here for anybody. You know, you have to work for a job. You have to show, you know, you have to be a product of society. You just don't walk across the border and get handed a job anymore. It's not, you know, we were joking. It's not like it was at the turn of the century for World War I, where people were coming in on one ship, getting enlisted in American Army and going out on the other ship. Okay. Things like that aren't happening anymore. And it is bad in Venezuela. That's a terrible dictator there, but, but if you're going to do it, acclaim asylum, hang out in Mexico, and then get your turn. But it's cold in Chicago. I mean, I don't want to be in Chicago, if I don't have to be. I've been to North Dakota in the wintertime, and that is freaking cold. So, go figure.
Coldest day of my life. I've been to the North Slope of Alaska, but the coldest day of my life was in Bismarck, North Dakota, one January, about 20 years ago. We had a meeting with the governor. And the parking lot and the governor's office is in the Capitol building. The parking lot is at the bottom of the hill where the Capitol building sits. And it was 7 degrees below zero and the wind was blowing about 50 miles an hour. We had to walk up that hill to get to that meeting with the governor. And I literally thought I was going to die. I don't ever want to go back to Bismarck, North Dakota in the winter.
What temp was it with wind chill?
7 below. The temperature was 7 below. Wind chill must have been, I guess it had to be like minus 40.
Oh, absolutely. I've been on the ice floes up in there during the winter in Alaska, and it was minus 20. So I'm sure you beat that, dude. I'll tell you what, my nose was the only thing sticking out of my parka.
It gets cold. Yeah, I've been to North Dakota in February. every time I've been to North Dakota, it's in February. We have a great partner up there. But he always comes to Texas in August. So it's a trade off. It's hilarious.
Now, y'all need to switch. You need to switch that timing. North Dakota's a cool place. I mean, I actually been up there several times and really enjoyed it, but not in early February. No.
Oh, yeah. It's gorgeous. Yeah, I've been in July once. It's a gorgeous place. And so is South Dakota, and so is the rest of America. We're just really blessed to be in such a great place. And, you know, we were speaking of how cold it is. I had an article on my Substack from UtilityDrive.com talking about how here in the great state of Texas, our administration and our legislation, more importantly, voted to help up the power in our grid using natural gas, so we don't have any more cold spells, or hopefully, right, David, that we don't have these shutdowns like we had about 2 years ago.
Yeah, if we get the plants built. I mean, you know, they passed the incentive, but still got to get generating companies to agree to build the plants, and that's been a real problem for a decade now in Texas, is due to a lot of different factors. The generator companies don't want to build power plants fired by natural gas or anything else. They just want to build wind and solar because that's what the incentives have been there for. And so, you know, what this program is a program to compete with those incentives. And unfortunately, because of federal policy and some state policies, all forms of energy on the grid now are subsidized by some government entity or another. So, you know, I had people complaining to me about the story I wrote on that, you know, that I would endorse that program. But you know, normally in a normal situation, if there really was a free market for power generation in Texas, like the government likes to claim there is, then I wouldn't have been in favor of that program. And neither would have, by the way, the lieutenant governor wouldn't have been in favor of it either. But the fact of the matter is every form of energy on the grid is subsidized and controlled by the government in one form or another. And so if you want to get natural gas built, you've got to compete with that in that space. And that's why Lieutenant Governor Patrick endorsed that bill and pushed it through the process.
Isn't that a shame that we have to compete with the federal government to make sure that we have reliable, sustainable, inexpensive energy? Yeah. I mean, that's a shame.
That's where we are today, folks.
Yeah, that's a shame.
Hey, David, your article in the Daily Caller today is a hoot. Absolutely pretty cool. Could you go over that for us with what does China know that the Biden admin doesn't? I'd say, one, where they are. Two, when their bowels are going to move. So, but you left those two out. Tell us what you were thinking when you wrote this.
Yeah, that program, story covered a lot of ground, didn't it? I actually worked the Texas bill into that. It starts with a discussion about the fact that China is so interested in building more coal plants that they're implementing a yet another new program to subsidize the building of even more coal-fired power plants than they already have on the books. On the books right now, under development, China has more proposed and coal-fired power plant projects underway right now than the rest of the world combined, okay? But they want so much more of it that now they're going to implement a program in January that's going to offer even more subsidies to build more coal plants. At the same time, the Biden administration is destabilizing our grid in the United States by, you know, forcing these coal plants, the few that we have left, into decommissioning because they can't afford to operate them anymore. And there's no way for them to meet the new emissions requirements without doubling the cost of energy for everybody. So you've got that going on. And then I just thought it was kind of ironic that in the midst of all that, voters in Texas approved Proposition 7 to try to get these natural gas power plants built here in Texas, which runs completely contrary to what's happening in the Biden administration. So you've got all these competing priorities in different jurisdictions. And, you know, the places that are going to have a stable grid are the places that are going to have enough electricity fired by coal, natural gas, or nuclear to cover their needs. because wind and solar are only good when the weather's fine and the sun is shining. And you're not going to make up for that with a bunch of batteries that have a 3-hour life cycle or charge cycle. So, you know, when you have a major winter storm that goes on for a week, a battery with a life of 3 hours isn't going to do you any good. You have to have base load generation.
It's kind of funny that Diablo Canyon up in California, they provide, I've heard, between 10 and 14% of the state's power. Got another 20 year extension. Yeah. 20 years. Try to do that to a wind farm. They don't last 15 minutes. They've got a bounty out on eagles to kill.
Oh, the wind farms? Yeah. Right. Yeah. I mean, they kill a lot of eagles every year, a lot of endangered birds. You know, we're building all these wind farms in South Texas right in the middle of migratory corridor for over 1,000 species of birds. Okay. And they're just decimating the migratory bird populations along the Texas Gulf Coast, and no one's willing to do anything to stop it.
You know, RT, the thing of second order magnitude that you and I have talked about a lot, one of them is mosquitoes. And I just flat didn't understand, but the bats that are being killed by these silly things, people are getting over.
Yeah. Well, hello? Did you freeze up
there? Anybody there?
Yep.
Oh, you're terrible. You're terrible. Oh,
that's right. Yeah. I mean, bats fly too. Anything that flies, you know, up to about 300 to 500 feet high, because that's how tall the towers are, is going to get hit by those blades.
I need to get my ex-wife on her broom up in a windmill farm.
Yeah.
That's
just rude.
That was funny. I can't believe I thought of that.
I don't know your wife, but I'm sure she, or your ex-wife, excuse me, but I'm sure she's a nice person.
Oh, she was. I was the only divorced virgin on the planet. Hey, I got one in California, and it was the I'm a funny son of a gun. It was the Wall Street Journal article, and this poor girl went around to 140 different charging stations, and I just got tickled watching the video, and the video was a hoot. She had three major problems, and I didn't know that this was that bad of a deal. I knew it was a bad deal, but 40% of the 120 didn't work. Credit cards didn't work, and you had to put in cash, but there was no cash machine part of it. The credit cards wouldn't do it. And then the car wouldn't handshake. I didn't realize that. I've always tried to train the kids in the church and in Boy Scouts, firm handshake, look them in the eye, and you get the job. Boy, you can't do that with an EV. The handshake wasn't working. So then they had to get a repair tech out there to put a new motherboard in the handshaker. And then it was also the grid portion of it. And they get a guy out there to flip the breaker, and it was ready again. So holy smokes, how does anybody drive one of them rascals? And the only the bottom line was, get a Tesla, because the others have a lot higher failure rate with a handshake.
Yeah, Tesla's, of course, and Tesla has its own proprietary chargers and charging stations all over the country now. Tesla's so far ahead of the traditional automakers like Ford and GM in the electric vehicle space. I'm not sure that companies like Ford and GM really have much hope of ever catching up. Tesla is so far out in front of them.
Oh, they're horrific. Well, RT, what do you see coming around the corner with oil prices? Because we saw that we've had a bit of a spike, and OPEC came out and said that they're not going to increase production, and they've even said that they're even not going to increase production through Q1, possibly Q2. But I did see another article that even though the quotas did not get increased, they are producing more. So what are your thoughts on oil coming around the corner? I'm confused. which is easy.
I'm right there with you, Stu, because I think the IEA, the International Energy Agency, just came out that they're already quoting that we're going to need a higher demand for oil for 2024 and 2025. And yet oil, you know, here as we record is, you know, still below $80 a barrel. You know, I figure we'll get up a little bit higher here once actually we get to the holiday season as it approaches. But, you know, all guesses are off. I had a great interview this week that I did with Brian Stubbs of Air Compressor Solutions. And, you know, I've been on record for half the year saying we'd average $100 oil this year. Well, we haven't even touched it yet this year. So obviously it's been and I'm on record. I mean, I record a show called The Crude Truth. Check it out. And speaking of that cheesy pun, guys, I just want to say this off topic. Shout out to my boy, JP Warren, with all these goofy videos he started to post on LinkedIn and on Twitter. He is just, I tell you what, he is doing it right. Networking, taking networking to a level beyond the next level. But anyway, I love his promotions and promoting the Exec Crew and Connection Crew and JP Warren. So sidebar. Okay. But no, Stu, I really don't know anymore. I mean, we're not even at $80 oil. Agencies are telling us we're going to need more oil. And the major suppliers of oil are telling us they're going to continue to cut back on that oil. So go figure. I mean, you know, that's a question that I would definitely ask David Blackman if he's around.
Well, I don't know where oil prices are going. I think they're probably going to, you know, if I had to guess, I would guess they're going to stick around about where they are through the end of the year. And then we'll see what happens with drilling next year and demand. You get to this late in the year and things tend to calm down as far as volatility in the oil price. So I guess we'll probably end up around $80 at the end of the year and going into next year, which, by the way, is a pretty healthy price.
I can't complain.
Did I make anybody faint there? Okay, sorry.
It's a very good price. I was speaking to some investors the other day, and you know, I mean, we budget right now everything at $65 oil, and right now 80's looking real good, so we can't complain.
Yeah, my investment's doing fine. Gotta love
That's good. Yep.
Oh yeah. You know, and the alternative investments is huge because my dad is a stock day trader, and he's sometimes I go down and the Harry Carey knife is all set out on the table and I'm a little worried, but today it's fine because he's able to do some serious day trading. I just shoot me. I couldn't do it. So, all right, coming around the corner, what do we got coming up this week there, David? What do you think?
Well, I've got Todd Royal, who is the co-author of the book about energy literacy with Ronald Stein. I'll be posting that interview later today. It'll go live on the Energy Question. Paul Hicken, the editor-in-chief of the Petroleum Economist, will be up next. That one should go live over the weekend. And then I just completed an interview with Emily Head, a geologist at Enverus, talking about, I think everyone's going to have a real interest in, we're talking about how the Barnett Shale formation could be the next big thing in the Permian Basin down in West Texas. So that's a really interesting story. I'm sure most people don't even realize the Barnett extends down that far, and it's got a real interesting twist to that story. So I think everyone will enjoy that. Emily's fantastic. She should really be doing more public speaking than she does.
Oh yeah.
I'm looking forward to that one, David. Looking forward to that one.
RT, how about you? What's coming around the corner?
Oh man, I've got some great interviews that I'll be releasing here over the next few weeks. The next one, minus, you know, with Grace Stanky that I just, released, who's Miss America. I got Jim Holmes, who's the CEO of LFS Chemistry. Great entrepreneur. Got some great tips and giving us a Crude Truth entrepreneurship. But also, as we lead into the end of the year and into the beginning of the year, I got some great people coming on that are just some real great positivity people. People that are talking about, hey, nice. Ways of, you know, just, you know, giving us a Crude Truth on, hey, everything's going to be okay. And how there's people out there that can help you get past where you're at that aren't, just people that can help you get past your problems and that life is going to be okay. And I mean that. So I got some great people coming up, like Christy Kearns, very excited. She's a keynote speaker, motivational keynote speaker. And then also I'm going to have on some other great individuals from the oil and gas industry talking about where we see oil going in 2024. So just got some really great episodes of the Crude Truth coming out. So also got episodes coming out from the Permian Basin International Oil Show real soon. So check those out and get ready for those. Very excited. And of course, we'll be at NAEP February 7th through the 9th. We are lining up some great interviews with some great LinkedIn influencers, I'll call them, but also some amazing CEOs and people in the energy sector that will not be speaking, because NAEP speaking engagement group is going to be amazing. So if you haven't gotten the NAEP where you can listen to all the speakers, I recommend you do that now. But we'll also have some great ones at our booth.
Oh, you bet. And great shout out. And sponsorships are still available for our four booth podcast row. Pretty darn cool. Okay.
And real quick, just to let people know, you know, if they wanted to get a sponsorship just for NAEP, not only are there going to be 10 to 15,000 people estimated right now at NAEP, but also then you've got all of our sites and all of our impressions that go on top of that. So this will be reaching, you know, 100,000 people over a 2-month period.
Oh, it's more than that, RT, because we're well over the 4.5 million on our articles this year for all three of our podcasts, which is pretty
fantastic.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
And just keeps eating up, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. And it's a trifecta of podcasts, if you would. David's got three, and then never mind, shut up. Okay, coming around the corner for me is I've got a media mogul I'm recording tomorrow. He got Rush Limbaugh, Tucker, Hannity, and several other big folks started. And I'm interviewing him on energy and farming, and it is going to be just wild. Got the ones that RT, you and I recorded in the Permian. I got two of those coming out as well. Got Sean Strawbridge. He's got a new gig. Going to be interviewing him Monday. Got Grace coming out, and got like four others that are coming out as well too. So the CEOs and industry thought leaders are lined up around here. We got them all lined up. Kind of like a dairy barn for milking. You know what 4 a.m. you hear moo, 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 moo means?
I'm not sure they're going to appreciate this analogy.
Moo, moo, moo at 4 a.m. is your herd of cattle coming into the dairy barn going, hey, I need to be milked. So, you know, and when I shovel it, it usually is, I smell money. A lot of people smell cow crap. I smell money. All right. With that, we will have all of our contact information. Crude Truth is crudetruth.com and thecrudetruth.com. And then David is blackman@substack.com, correct?
Blackman.substack.com.
Thank you very little.
No, thoughts. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I'm at energynewsbeat.co, and we will see you guys next week. Thank you all very much for listening to the three podcasters walk into a bar.
Adios.
Adios.